I take this little line as my text, the question that that man asks himself, what shall I do? What shall I do? For I have no place to store my crops. I think more than in most other vocations, farmers tend to be divided pretty starkly into one of two camps, good farmers and bad farmers. Or, depending on your perspective, and especially if you are a farmer, lucky farmers and unlucky farmers. It is true that a lot of fortune, good or bad, goes into the outcome of a farming life, but somehow fortune tends to favor the smart farmer and to trouble the rest. Both of my parents, my mom and my dad, spent their formative years growing up on farms. And while, like most people of their generation, neither of them ended up making a livelihood of farming, the lessons that they learned in those formative years were never far from them. Good farmers strike a kind of zen-like balance between conservative practicality and liberal resourcefulness, between cautious living and risk-taking inventiveness. Bad farmers or unsuccessful farmers tend to be good at one or another of those things, but not both. The problem for them is the balance. When I hear the story that Jesus tells about the rich man whose land produced abundantly, I think I know how I am supposed to preach this lesson, and how it probably was preached in most places this morning. It is a warning against materialism, against the danger of putting your faith in your stuff. And a lot of people this morning, I'm sure, will no doubt have quoted George Carlin's old theology about how the purpose of life is to find a place for your stuff. Unless, of course, you choose otherwise, which takes a lot of courage, a courage that most of us lack. That theme will have covered about 80 or 85% of all preaching today. And in Episcopal churches, there might well have been another theme, one about social justice. The preacher will have pointed out that the setup of the story is a discourse by Jesus to a crowd of poor people. In the midst of this erupts a dispute over inheritance, a dispute between a man and his brother in a time and in a culture in which only men inherited anything. And there was a significantly unequal distribution of an estate between the eldest brother and everyone else. And that might cover another 10% or so of all the preaching. But I want to go back to the fact about farmers. Because the story that Jesus tells, at least to me, is completely non-controversial. If you spend much time among farmers, it is not surprising at all that the land of a rich man would produce abundantly. Because he is a good farmer. Good farmers produce well, and bad farmers generally produce less well. I think none of that would have been surprising or scandalous to the people listening to Jesus. Instead, I think the focus is on the question that weighs on that man's mind. What should I do? What should I do? For I have no place to put all these crops. The whole point of being a farmer is to grow crops and then to turn those crops to use, either as produce to sell or as feed for animals. There is no injustice in the fact that this man has done well. The question of justice, the answer to that moral question, what should I do? It comes because of that abundance. The farmer's question expresses in profound simplicity, the paradox of possession. We have been designed to work, to seek, to accomplish, to strive, and when we succeed, when we produce abundantly whatever it is we're trying to produce, we are confronted with the paradox of possession. Now what? What now should I do? The farmer's solution is a very good solution for a farmer. I'm not sure about pulling down the old barn, but the idea of building a bigger barn is sensible, at least on the terms that the farmer has to work with. It does not seem as though he has considered many other options. He could give the surplus away. He could sell it at a discount. He could rent space in other barns. None of those seem to have been compelling possibilities to the farmer. It's either keep it or lose it. That is the paradox of possession. You work hard and strive to succeed in order to gather in your harvest, whatever your harvest is, and when you do, you are confronted with a new and different set of problems, a new set of challenges. We know how the story turns out for the farmer. In the end, he doesn't have to figure out a solution to the paradox of possession because he dies. In a strange way, the story is actually circular because the farmer did not figure out a solution to the problem of this abundance before dying. He has presumably left an inheritance mess behind that will now become the source of another struggle, much like the one that kicks off the story between the brothers. When I started working on this sermon some weeks ago, I did not know that I would be spending the 6 days leading up to it on a driving tour of the upper northeastern United States and southern Ontario. Over these past days, I have put nearly 2,000 miles on my car, and I have seen a lot of barns. And they pretty much reflect the divide between good farmers and bad farmers. At least the well-kept and the not-so-well-kept barns. There are barns that are beautifully and elegantly arranged to perform all of the tasks appointed for barns. Storage and shelter for livestock and machine shop and workbench. And there are barns that are decaying rapidly into ruin, long since abandoned by the farmer who gave up tending the land. Like anything else that does its work well, a well-kept barn is a thing of beauty, of order, of creation. It is sort of like a waiting room for the gardener of Eden. It is a place that somehow incarnates that delicate Zen-like balance that is the mark of a good farmer. It is ordered but useful. It is neat but not too neat. It is cared for but not worshipped. And a good farmer uses a barn to strike the balance between scarcity and abundance, between having enough and going hungry. So how does this have anything to do with us? Well, I think it does in two ways. First, I think the lesson here is really one about balance, about perspective, more than it is a message against materialism. We all know that materialism is both dangerous and foolish. Saying that is not really saying anything new or insightful. But maintaining that balance between work and reward, between the fruit of our labors and our tendency to hoard what we've earned, that is a matter that calls for our reflection every day, and certainly every payday. That's the first thing. The second is a little bit like an inversion of the whole story. Because the thing that we have an abundance of right now in the church, the thing that our work and labor has yielded in abundance is barns. We have a bumper crop of barns, an abundance of barns. Of course, I'm talking about churches, church buildings, 8 of them, just in our Episcopal Church, all within the city limits of Newton. There's not a lot of guidance from the story in Luke about what to do with an abundance of barns. It would at least seem as though the idea of tearing down smaller ones to build bigger ones is maybe not the hallmark of a good farmer, at least not on this land. But it is our abundance for now. And unlike the farmer in the story that Jesus tells, we probably do have alternatives other than simply keeping them all or losing them all. I think we need to be even better farmers than that rich man. I think we need to create and explore different ways of making godly use of our abundance, to find that balance between hoarding and having. So that when our souls are finally demanded of us, we will have a better account to offer of the use we made of the fruit of our labor. Amen.